calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the dust. London's calling. See, we ain't got no... Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be Matt Smith. In the seventh episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, I'll ask Matt his thoughts on the away loss for Fulham against Sheffield Wednesday. The show will be looking, as always, at Fulham from a coaching perspective, so I'm curious to hear what Matt has to share today. But before we get started, I have to welcome back my friend to the seventh edition of the show. Yes, this is our seventh show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner.
Hey, Russ. It's good to be back. And, you know, talking about these games is therapeutic to me a little bit, and it's always fun to come on in the morning and talk to you.
It's great. I personally, I get so much out of it. I love doing this with you. You know, again, you and I were talking off air that you thought this was therapeutic for you. I think it's therapeutic for me. I enjoy it. It just engages me more in Fulham Football Club, and we really get a little bit deeper into what is actually going on. And we look at it from a coaching perspective, which I do enjoy. So without further ado, let's now look at the Sheffield Wednesday loss. Again, Fulham do go down 3-2, but again, I just want to get your overall view of that match.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway from it is the lack of personal responsibility defensively. I think, you know, with the three goals that we gave up and the fashion that we gave them up, is a lack of simple personal responsibility, because we man mark on free kicks. That's pretty clear. Yep. And that just wasn't very effective, or at least just the one-on-one battles, it wasn't very effective. And so, you know, overall, that's kind of my biggest takeaway from the game. I thought that, you know, in the second half, I thought we played better and started to go for the win, or tried to go for the equalizer and scored a couple of nice goals. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you can't defend set pieces, you're not going to win games. You know, that's just the nature of this league, that if you are vulnerable on crosses and set pieces, you know, you're going to struggle to pick up points, you know, especially, you know, on the road against a team who likes to cross the ball in and, you know, play the ball into the box and things like that. So it was pretty frustrating, and I know frustrating for a lot of the fans, and, you know, there's some things that I would do, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But, yeah, overall, you can't be very happy with the result. I guess you can be happy with maybe the pushback that we made towards the end of the game, if you're looking for anything to take away from it. But, you know, other than that, you walk away pretty sour, I think.
You know, I agree with pretty much everything you just said there, Matt. And we will be talking about what you would do later on to combat these set-piece issues that Fulham are having. And I'm just going to ask you just a basic question. When's the last time you've seen a match where you've seen three goals go in on set pieces? I can't remember the last time that's happened.
I can't remember. You know, not a Fulham match. You know, although, you know, last year there were a couple that were you know, we may have allowed one or two in the same match, but, you know, very rarely do you see three, because you hope that, you know, once a couple go in, that actually people start to say, hey, this can't happen again, and things like that. So it's pretty frustrating to see that kind of consistent theme throughout the game.
I totally agree with that, Matt. And like we always do, we're going to be breaking down the play of the positions here. And let's start with the goalkeeper, Andy Lonergan. He's been solid so far for Fulham Football Club. Again, I want to say a couple matches ago, he was my man of the match. So, again, how did he fare in this match to you, Matt, after you watched it back?
Well, as good as he's been, and as consistent as he's been, is just about equal to how inconsistent he was, during this 90 minutes. He made some great saves, some great point blank saves. But on the second goal, I thought that was, you know, even though he made a great save to give them the corner, I thought that the goal was pretty soft from his perspective. You know, I don't think he misplayed some crosses coming out and missing punches and things like that on more than one occasion. And I'll tell you something that I noticed that I'm sure that maybe some other people caught a little bit, is I'm afraid that he may be carrying a knock. I think that he went back a couple of times to take goal kicks, and you see him grabbing his back a little bit as if it's a little tight. And that's kind of troubling for me. And I'm wondering if maybe that's the reason that he did not play in the Capital One Cup match against Stoke. So that's just something to keep an eye on. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything about him carrying a knock. But when you see a goalkeeper clutching at his back and things like that, that's usually not good news.
Well, that's very interesting. I did not notice that, but that's something that we really should be watching. It's funny that the minute you just said that, I went back and I thought about the fact that Lewis played against Stoke City. Maybe there's more to this. And again, Kitch just had his presser. He didn't mention anything at this point. Again, that could change once the team news comes out. But he didn't mention anything about Lonergan. But you know, that's something to really watch there, Matt. I'm glad that you brought that up. But let's go back and talk about Lonergan, because on our last show, David Holly mentioned, again, we were talking a little bit Lonergan about the play of his, and he was talking about, I'm not sure about which corner he was talking about that they scored on, that he was disappointed that he did not come out and command his box and do something against one of these corners. I can't remember which one he was talking about, but that he should have come out for it. He said Schwarzer would have. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that that's another kind of red flag that you wonder about how confident he is in his body right now. This is all speculation.
This is just
stuff that I'm seeing, and I don't think it's necessarily anything serious. But it may just be something that's putting him off a little bit. And you know, there was a couple of corners where either he came out and missed it or didn't come out at all. I even think possibly the third goal that, you know, could be something where you just can't be rooted to your line. I mean, I'm pretty sure the guy makes the diving header from inside the six or just right at the six, and it's an in-swinger, so it's something that he should be able to deal with. It's hard to, you know, what you want to do is you want to see him making confident decisions and aggressive decisions. And I agree that with David, with, you know, the fact that, you know, Schwarzer probably comes to that, and, you know, Schwarzer made would make some aggressive mistakes, but those you can handle, those you can deal with as a coach. You can deal with aggressive mistakes because you can't. It's a lot easier to pull somebody back than it is to make them more aggressive. If they're not comfortable being aggressive, then it's really hard to coach that into them. But it is a little bit easier to go the other way. So, you know, that's really what we want to see, is we want to see him making some confident, aggressive decisions, and he really didn't, at least not on a consistent basis.
Listen, I'm glad that we could talk about this. I'm glad that David brought this up, because when he brought that up on the last show, I had to rethink and then watch it back again. And David's right. You know, again, I'm backing both of you on that. And maybe you're right. Maybe there's something going on there physically. We just don't know. It's speculation on our point. But he needs to command that box, Matt. And for whatever reason, whether it was potentially injury-related or confidence-related, he didn't do that in this match. And maybe that was also part of the problem here.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Completely agree. And it's just something that hopefully it's just a flash, a flash in the pan, and he'll get back to his consistent ways, because he has been very, very good. So you don't want to crucify the guy for one performance.
Right.
After how well he's been playing. But it's just something to, you know, you do have to go. It's a results-driven business, and you do have to go game by game at times. And it really, in this game, if I'm giving him a grade, I probably give him maybe a C minus, just because of some of the saves that he did make.
Okay, very good. And again, let's just stress, anyone that's listening to this, we've not heard anything about any injury. We're just speculating that again, what Matt has seen, he's seen him, you know, watching him. You know, this is one of the great things that Matt does. He really watches the tape, watches it back, watches the video back, and this is what he's noticing. So, again, hopefully there's nothing going on there. But again, you know, I'm glad that Matt can at least mention it. Like I said, this is just speculation with Lonergan, you know, potentially dealing with something. We just don't know. Okay. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's all talk about the play and the fullbacks in this match. How'd they do?
Not very well. I was not not very happy with their play, specifically Jazz Richards. You got to say he's at fault for the first goal. It's his man, just jumps right over him, and I'm pretty sure After going back and watching the replay a couple of times, that you know, even though Jazz Richards isn't the tallest of players, I'm pretty sure he still had a couple of inches on the player that scored, and he just let him go right over him. And really, his body shape, it really his defending body shape is average at best. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you defend, you really would love to defend facing upfield, so facing our attacking goal. And he gets caught a lot of the time facing our goal, chasing the play, not really predicting things. And even even just before the first goal, you know, Billy Bannon had a header, had a free header at the back post that Lonergan made a great save on, and Jazz Richards is nowhere to be found. You know, just the lack of awareness. And what I'm starting to figure out is what kind of player Jazz Richards is, and that's a luxury player. And what I mean by a luxury player is good going forward, does well when he has people that work hard around him, but isn't really, you know, possibly isn't really willing to put in the work himself. And so, you know, it's really frustrating because going forward, he's quite good, and you know, he does like to get forward, and when we do get him the ball in the attack, he's, you know, he does some decent things. I mean, you know, he was involved in the setup to the second goal, you know, with a couple of nice moves and some nice footwork and things like that. So, you know, there is an upside to his game, but you know, in this league, I don't think we have room for luxury players. Not in the back. You know, a luxury player is usually one of those that you know, plays up front or plays in the middle of the field, and you know, so that was pretty frustrating. James Husband, you know, I thought that he was pretty anonymous. I didn't really see him get into the attack a whole lot. I think he got left out on an island by Ben Pringle, who we'll talk about here in a second. But I felt like he got left on an island in 2v1 situations because of Ben Pringle's poor positioning. You know, then the weird thing to me was we made a substitution and put Tim Ream out on the left at the beginning of the second half and moved Husbands into the left midfield,
right,
and only left him there for 10 to 12 minutes. How can you get into the flow of a game in a new position in 10 to 12 minutes? And it's, you know, I thought the more obvious change was to do what they did after that, which is to go. Sorry, with LVC, you know, out there out wide. But you know, but I thought he got left on an island. That's why I thought he got pinned back a little bit, because he was caught 2v1 and having to deal with two players. So, you know, I wasn't really happy with their performances overall.
Okay, very good. And listen, we're going to be talking about this player as a fullback coming up. But how did Tim Ream do as a left back? Because again, this is something that is becoming a theme. We have players that are versatile that can play several positions, and in this case, play two positions in one match. How did Tim Ream do at left back?
I thought he did okay. Now, he's not going to offer the attacking presence that Husbands is going to offer, because I think his natural position, I think, is center back. So he's not going to be, you know, overly inclined to get forward consistently, or to get as far forward as maybe Husbands is comfortable doing. But, you know, he's very good with the ball. He's a decent passer of the ball. You know, he does lack a little bit of pace, as our American fans may have seen when he played left back against Brazil. But, you know, I guess anybody can look to have a lack of pace against Brazil. But, you know, I thought that he did, a satisfactory job, but he's just not going to offer a whole lot going forward when he plays out there.
Okay, very good. All right, excellent. Let's now move to now the play of Tim Ream, of course, Richard Stearman as fullback and a fullback as center backs, and also we have to throw Dan Byrne in there because he came in the second half. How did they all get along there as center backs?
Well, I still think that they're struggling with either some communication issues or basically who's going to take the reins and really control things. Because you still see two people step into balls, especially crosses. You see two people go into crosses, you know, to attack crosses. You see nobody going to attack crosses. And so it's a little bit inconsistent. Their play has been inconsistent. I think Stearman is the natural one to take the reins, but it just doesn't seem like he's fallen into that role yet. But you know, in terms of where the trouble came from, it didn't come down the middle. So you got to say that they did a decent job there of forcing play wide and things like that. And, you know, they did have a handful with the big, you know, the big guy up front for Sheffield Wednesday. Was a handful. And so I thought that they did a decent job with them. Really, the problem was out on the flanks and dealing with those crosses. So that's something that they're just going to have to focus on.
Okay, very good. And I want to drill down a little bit on Dan Byrne, because Dan Byrne came in. I really want to get your thoughts on how he played, because, you know, listen, there have been fans that want to see him play more. How did he do overall, Matt? You know, I know we're talking about the center back position in general, but how did Dan Byrne do?
I actually thought he played okay. I've never really been the biggest fan, as people probably know from this show, of Dan Byrne, but I actually thought that he came in and did a job and made some good tackles was very confident and assertive in his play. And really, at the end of the day, from a substitute center back, that's really all you can ask for. And I thought that he did, you know, a more than admirable job coming in off the bench and adding a little bit of a spark some things that I saw from him. On a positive note, was a little bit of grit and determination, and that's something that usually you don't see from him, because he is kind of, even though he's tall, he's a bit of a slight guy. He's not, doesn't have a lot of big build to him. But he made some really good tackles and really good, situation stifling tackles. I was actually happy with that substitution.
Okay, very good. And just getting back before we move on to the midfield, because I want to talk about this a little bit more. The combination of Tim Ream and then, of course, Richard Stearman, you've already alluded to this. No one's really taken the reins. For them to be compliments, because I think that they're different types of players, at some point, doesn't Stearman or Ream have to take the reins?
Yeah, no, one of them has to. Usually it's kind of, when we had Breida and Husey back there,
right.
It was,
I was thinking of them,
Husey,
that's why I'm, right.
Yeah, and, you know, Husey was the one that really took the reins leadership-wise, where Hanglin was the big, strong, aerial battle winner and things like that. You know, Aaron Hughes was still the leader and the main communicator and things like that back there. So that was, you know, that's the kind of partnership that you really want to have. And I just don't think that they have that yet. I don't know if it's them still needing to get used to each other or them maybe not having the confidence in themselves, in order to be able to do that. But, you know, Richard Stearman, that was his role at Wolves, was to be that leader and that, you know, kind of driving force in the back. So hopefully, and I see him trying to do it. I think that he's just got to kind of grow into that role, and it may take, a couple more weeks for him to really grow into that role at Fulham.
Okay, great. And that's kind of where I'm going on that. I think it's more of a timing thing. They just need more time to play together. Whether it's Stearman and Ream or Byrne coming in, I think that someone needs to take the reins. I think eventually it'll be Richard Stearman, but someone's got to be that leader back there. And hopefully that will happen sooner than later. All right, Matt, let's move on. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, one more thing on that. I mean, people have to remember that it didn't happen right away for Aaron Hughes and Breida Hanglin. That partnership didn't just happen right away. That when we saw them at their best, they had been playing together for a year or so. It's hard to say have patience, but we have to have patience.
Okay, very good there, Matt. All right, let's now talk about the play in the midfield.
Well, the wing midfielders, I thought Kearney was probably our most dangerous winger, I'd say, by a long stretch, cutting inside. He had a couple of good shots, a couple of dangerous shots. I would still like to see him get the ball in wider positions and more isolated, because I think that he's very good 1v1 on the dribble. So I'd like to see him, even if he does cut inside, I'd like to see him pick the ball up in wider positions. Ben Pringle, unfortunately, for the second straight game, was not at the races. I thought that he was a little bit scatterbrained. He was inside. He was out. He was inside when he should have been outside. He was outside when he should have been inside. Defensively, he was virtually non-existent. I mean, there was a couple of times actually that I remember seeing him step to balls basically go in front of Jamie O'Hara and step to a ball in the middle of the field, and you just don't know why he's pressing so hard. Is he just trying to do something right and just trying to work his socks off to impress and to show that he is, or is he not really comfortable with what his role is? He tended to make us pretty narrow on that side in the attack because of his poor positioning defensively. And the crosses that he put in, which is really his calling card, what he does well, were below average, at least by his standards. So from those two, you gotta say that Kearney was by far the better. Even though I'd like to see him, pick the ball up in wider areas in the middle. I still think that we need a player who's going to sit and really hold the space, like a Scotty Parker or whatever. But Tunnicliffe does well. I've actually been pretty impressed with him the past couple of games since he's come in. I think that he's played well. He's a decent passer of the ball, good striker of the ball, has decent awareness on the attack, works very hard. And then Jamie O'Hara had another pretty good game, a goal and assist. So you can't really say that he probably had the biggest impact on the game just from the sheer statistics part. But I thought there were some wayward passes and things like that. But I still think that when you look at the team as a whole, he's still our best player. I don't think there's really any doubt about that. He's definitely been our most consistent performer.
Okay, very good. And let's get back to talking about that partnership, talking about O'Hara and Tunnicliffe. And I think Tunnicliffe has played well, but something just rang in my head when you were mentioning this, and thinking about Danny Murphy and, say, Dixon Atuhu. Tunnicliffe is not the same type of player, obviously, that Dixon Atuhu was more of that protector back there. Do Fulham need that, Matt, or can they get away with someone like a Tunnicliffe who plays the position differently?
Well, you can get away with it when you play a team like Sheffield Wednesday, who likes to attack down the flanks, like they did, and then cross balls in. When you deal with a team that's a little bit more direct and a little bit more narrow in the attack, you might struggle because there's going to be pockets of space, which we've talked about, in between the midfield and the back. So it can be kind of a game to game thing, but. But it can work, but just my coaching philosophy personally, I like to have somebody there who's going to hold that space, not allow counterattacks down the middle of the field, switch the point of attack, always be an outlet, if we don't have any options going forward, to always be that outlet back, kind of a Dixon Atuhu figure, or, kind of the Patrick Vieira type player, who's just going to be, is going to look to attack and score goals and things like that, but at the same time knows their role, and their number one role is to be an outlet, to be an option, and stop counterattacks defensively.
Well, that's going to lead me to ask you again. He's now in full training, and that's Scotty Parker. You've already mentioned him. Have Fulham missed him at all?
I think they have. I think they've almost missed him more from a leadership and just the way that he plays the game. I think that kind of stuff is contagious, and I think that's we have been missing that. Hopefully he can get back and he can kind of bring in a spark, and we can see what it looks like with him and O'Hara. I think if you play somebody like a Scott Parker behind O'Hara, it may give O'Hara even more freedom to be more creative and more ambitious going forward, which could be a good thing.
That's the reason why I wanted to ask you, because I'm curious to see how that looks. Will that open up O'Hara a little bit more to go a little bit more forward, be more aggressive? Not that he hasn't been, but again, he's playing that Danny Murphy role really well, but he could probably even attack even more if he had someone behind him or with him like Scotty Parker. So I'm curious to see if that will that will manifest itself when Scott Parker comes back, and if Kit goes with playing the two of them. But then, again, what's great here, Matt, is that you have options in the middle. You have Ryan Tunnicliffe. You have players that you can move centrally as well. You could have LVC play central as well. So there are several ways that you can do it, which is good to have. It's good to have options to play against the opponent, a certain opponent, to match up against the opponent.
Right, right. And you know, it's interesting, and we haven't seen LVC in a couple of weeks, at least in the starting lineup. And, you know, I thought that the O'Hara and LVC partnership was going quite well. And Tunnicliff brings something. He does. But I think, you know, LVC can be a calming influence and, you know, can kind of allow O'Hara to sit in the middle and dictate the pace of play, not have to be the you know, penetrating passer all the time and things like that, because LVC can take care of that. Whereas Tunnicliff is almost, you know, has kind of a forwards mindset in the attack where he likes to drive at players and things like that. You know, so it's an interesting kind of partnership that all three of them have kind of individually, and they're each little in their pairs. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how we go forward and what kind of options we see.
Yeah, great. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it, because, you know, each one of these players in central midfield have something different to offer. And it's up to Kit to see what he needs from match to match and how it all works together. All right, Matt, let's now talk about the strikers up front. How do they do?
For large periods of the game, I didn't realize we were playing with strikers, to be honest with you. I think that they were quite anonymous. I know reading some of the Twitter feeds from Mike Gregg and things like that, he said something to the effect of, notice that I haven't mentioned Ross McCormick in a while.
He did tweet that.
And for good reason. I mean, they were quite anonymous. I thought Dembele was snuffed out, whether you want to attribute that to good defending tactics from Sheffield Wednesday, or just average play, you know, not a good day at the office for them. But you know, one thing I thought Sheffield Wednesday actually did a great job of tactically is really compressing the space for our forwards, and it really looked congested as we came forward. It really looked congested. It wasn't as free-flowing as the Blackburn match, and I think that's something that you probably have to give a lot of credit to Sheffield Wednesday and how they defended us and how they didn't let our forwards get up to speed. Our forwards had to do 5 and 10 yard checks. They didn't really allow Dembele to get into the channels and really run and get up to speed before the ball was played. So I think you got to give them a lot of credit, but you've got to adapt. Yeah, as a player, you've got to adapt on the run, and you've got to be able to make tactical changes on your own and find ways to get into gaps and get the ball and get into space and try to run at people. So, you know, it was a pretty disappointing afternoon, and I think that when we don't have quality play and get quality chances from our forwards, I just don't think we're going to be very successful. And so that's got to be a little bit more consistent.
Okay, very good, because, you know, it's funny. I'm glad that you mentioned what Mike Gregg, our co-host, tweeted out, because when you watch back, if you get a chance to watch this back, you will say, hey, where's Ross McCormick in this match? And also Moussa Dembele, again, he's there, but again, they did a nice job on him. And Matt, that's a very good point, because, again, you have to give credit where credit's due, and I'm glad that you mentioned that Sheffield Wednesday did a nice job against them. However, on the flip side, I'm glad that you also mentioned, you know, you need to adjust as a player. You need to be able to make those adjustments and find those pockets and find a way to get open. And, you know, again, Moussa Dembele is a young player. He will figure that out, and I have confidence in Ross McCormack as well. But I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, again, when things aren't going right, you need to find a way to adjust to that and find another way. So again, that's what's great about us talking about this, is that we can really break it down. All right, Matt, now that we've talked about the Sheffield Wednesday match, talk about the different positions, let's talk about different coaching situations, and let's go back and talk about those three set-piece goals given up by Fulham. As a coach, what do you make of giving up three goals on all these set-pieces, and how do you fix the problem moving forward?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, it all comes down to personal responsibility. Jazz Richards on the first one, Moussa Dembele on the second one, and Tim Ream on the third one. You know, it's all about kind of, you know, defensive pride and you know, individual pride and responsibility on those. And, you know, it was just very disappointing to see how we gave them up. you know, for Jazz Richards and Dembele and all three of them, none of them really even challenged for the ball. None of them jumped for the ball. You know, Timmery may have stuck out a toe, kind of a, you know, a matador ole with his leg, but you know, nothing, no real serious challenge. You know, and yeah, so it was pretty disappointing, and I hope that they were told about it and know in certain terms from the coaching staff. But you know, it was pretty. I tell you what was probably the most disappointing thing about it, and I think I can't remember if David or Mike tweeted out this comment from Kit Simons, just talking about how, you know, that's something that, you know, the players find boring and things like that. And you know what, as a coach, I would say you don't get to care if it's boring if we keep getting scored on like that. Like you, that doesn't. It, I mean, if you think it's boring, then show me you can do it and we'll move on. You know, if we're giving up three goals on set pieces, I don't really care what's boring to you anymore. You know, and maybe that's just me as an individual, kind of the way that I look at things. But, you know, if my team gives up three goals on set pieces, I can guarantee you the next 3 days we're doing something in training dealing with set pieces, dealing with crosses, things like that. And I'm not really worried about how the players feel about it. Do they like to do it? Do they like training that stuff or is it boring or whatever? Because they don't really get a say in that anymore when it becomes a problem in terms of how we get results, then it becomes the coach's problem, and that's my problem. If it becomes my problem, I have to deal with it. It's done. There's no more, okay, players, you guys deal with it. Then as soon as it becomes my problem, which if it affects the result, it's my problem, then you don't really have a say in it anymore. And you're going to do what we want you to do, how we want you to do it. And if you don't, then you're going to get dropped. And I think, you know, I think under unfortunately – I think where this kind of goes back from, and just the kind of history of this is, I think that Kit is a player's coach, and I think the guys like him, and I think that he likes that they like him. I wonder if he has the iron fist to pull out to really lay down the law. I think that he tried to go. The possibility is he tried to go so far away from what Felix Magath was doing in his iron fist that he went way to the other extreme, and I'm not sure he has that kind of impact to be able to get in players' faces and to really tell them what's what. And, you know, that's something that's pretty troubling and can be troubling because it can be pretty consistent, you know, a consistent downward spiral. So, you know, it's just pretty frustrating, but that's how I would handle it. Is, you know, the next three days we're doing something dealing with crosses, and I'm not really too concerned about how the players feel about that.
I totally agree with you, Matt, and it's funny because again, this started from an interview that Kit did right after the match with BBC London Sport. He did this interview, and I actually heard it. It's on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and he does go into talking about the fact that that the players might find it boring, but obviously it's work that he, I am paraphrasing, that he knows that they need to do. And a positive to come out of this, again, I was listening to the Stoke City broadcast, and Scott Parker was the co-host on this along with Gentleman Jim. He mentioned that there was a good amount of work. The match was on Tuesday, so this was on Monday. There was a good amount of work on, I believe he was talking about corner kicks. He might have been talking about set pieces in general. I'm not 100% sure, but he did mention on corner kicks that they were doing a good amount of work on that Monday. So obviously they're working on it. They need to work on it. And moving forward, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about this. I know it's a different sport, but I'm here in New England. I'm a fan of the New England Patriots. And these are situations that Bill Belichick will call situational football, and he drills his team to death on situational football. Well, this is a different type of football. This is the original football. And these are situations that he needs to drill his team, Matt. I'm talking about Kit. I don't care how long it takes. Like you said, 3 days. You keep doing it. I don't care how boring it is. You keep doing it until you get it right, Matt.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, that's kind of how I deal with it with my players is if it's easy, then show me it's easy and we'll move on.
Right.
Until you show me that, we've got to keep working on it.
Right. it's repetition. You know, you got to keep doing it. You got to practice makes perfect. You got to keep doing it. And I'm glad to hear, again, like I said on the broadcast, that they are working on it. Obviously, they need to. And they need to keep doing it more and more until it becomes second nature. And this is something that Roy Hodgson did all the time. You know, again, I remember reports way back then talking about his training methods, but it worked. You know, again, winning takes care of everything. If they win, they won't care that they're practicing things over and over again. You know, you drill them until they get it. That's the way I look at it. All right, Matt, one other coaching situation, then we have some topics for you to discuss from the Fulham supporters. Fulham lost 1-0 in the Capital One Cup match on Tuesday, which I was just talking about, against Stoke City. But seriously, they dominated the play in the second half. As a coach, even in a loss, can you build momentum with a decent performance going into the next match, even though you lost the match?
Well, I definitely think you can. And I think you can in this match specifically because it was against a Premier League side. I think that if you do it against a championship side, even if it's one of the top championship sides in the table right now, even if it's a Brighton or, you know, an Ipswich or whoever, I don't think it's as easy to take positives from that if they're in your same league. But when you show that you can do it against a Premier League side, it's a little bit different. I think you can definitely take some positives from it. You can say, you know, you're able to step back and have some perspective and say, hey, if we can do that against a Premier League side, then why can't we do it in the championship on weekends? And so I think the fact that it was a Premier League side can help you take positives from that. Now, having said that, that can't be a consistent theme of, oh, we lost again, but here are some positives we can take. You know, it doesn't really work like that. It can be kind of a one-time kind of thing, or maybe a very rare occurrence. But it can't be a week-to-week, we've lost our fifth straight game, but here's another thing we can take, you know, positively.
Right.
You know, so it's something that that you can, and I think they will hopefully build on it. But like I said, I think it definitely helps that it wasn't a team from their own league that they did it against. So I think it is easier to do that when you kind of look at it that way.
Listen, it's great how you broke that down, talking about the differences in the opponent, meaning that this is the Premier League. You know, you're going against a Premier League team, and you were able to really, you know, again, control the play in the second half, Matt. And I find this interesting. I'm just going to share this with you really quickly if I can find the stats, because I find these stats fascinating. You know, again, we don't have real – You know, I guess you could say more inclusive stats, but I do have these stats to share. And you tell me if this tells you something positive to take out of this. This is against Stoke. Fulham had 52% of the possession to 48. This is one's interesting. Total shots, 12-5 in favor of Fulham. On target, Fulham only had 2-1 for Stoke. Corners, Fulham had 5. Stoke only had 1. This is the one that stands out to me. Crosses, Matt, 21-4. Can you take something out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps develop an identity. I think it helps to say, hey, this is how we can be successful, and this is how we can be dangerous. You know, more than shots and shots on goal and things like that, I look at more of crosses and corners in terms of how dangerous you are, because those are dangerous situations. I mean, you know, a shot can come from, you know, a shot can technically come from, you know, 40 yards out and trickle to the goalkeeper, and if he wasn't there, technically it would have gone in, kind of thing. But, you know, crosses and putting balls into the box, that's showing intent, and that's showing, you know, that you are being dangerous and you're getting into dangerous positions. So I actually think that crosses and corners are more of a telling stat, than even shots are, at times. So, you know, that's definitely a positive thing, and I think it's something that tells us something we need to do more of that we haven't been – that I really didn't think we did against Sheffield Wednesday.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about Ben Pringle, and when I was looking back at some of the highlights, Ben Pringle was putting several crosses in the box, and maybe he wasn't as much for whatever reason against Sheffield Wednesday. Maybe he made a little bit of an adjustment for himself because, again, I think that's something that we need. We need to get the ball in the box much more frequently than we do. All right, Matt, let's now go on to questions. Let's first start with our friend, as I'm trying to go through this, I've got more questions for you. But let's start with our friend in New Zealand, Anthea Evans. Here's her question to you. Is the team's defense more important than attack or offense? I felt this way with Roy Hodgson's approach to get an organized, solid defensive unit first, then create a potent attack. What are your thoughts on her question there, Matt?
Well, my coaching philosophy is one that I like to win the ball higher up the field. So this is definitely not a cop-out from answering the question, but I actually think that the best defense is a good offense. And I know that's very cliche, but, I think that our defending from the front can be better. I think it is important to improve the attack and score goals, obviously. And I think that if you defend higher up the pitch and change kind of those tactics defensively, you are going to have more opportunities. So I think one definitely lends itself to the other. But, I think the simple answer is, yeah, we've got to work out the back. And we've got to work out some very specific things in the back. But I think that there are ways to take pressure off your back line by winning the ball higher up the field, by having your midfielders and forwards winning the ball instead of all the time your outside backs and your center backs having to win the ball.
So for you, again, it sounds like to me it's a difference in philosophy. You're a different type of coach than, say, Roy. When Roy was more about defense. Not that you don't think of defense, Matt. Your philosophy's different. That's all.
Yeah, and it's just I don't think either one is wrong. I don't think either one. It really depends on a lot on personnel and things like that as well. There's a lot of other things, a lot of other factors that come into it. I think that team with Roy Hodgson was very good on the counterattack, was very good in dictating the pace of play and slowing the game down and things like that. And so that's what worked for them. Me personally, I would rather the ball never get to our defensive third. I'd rather win the ball in the middle third or even our attacking third and be able to come right back at them.
Okay, very good. And honestly, I like your philosophy better. That's just me personally. I understand Roy's philosophy. It worked. But I like a more positive approach, and that seems to be the way that you approach it. Again, neither one is wrong. That's just your preference. It's also my preference as well. All right, Matt, I think you're going to know this next person. It's from Heather Frederick Smith. Did you notice any one player more to blame for lack of man marking when defending set pieces?
Well, the wife said she was going to chime in and test me a little bit, but so I'm glad to see that she had a break from work to be able to do it. But if there were three people. I do think it's a very individual thing. When you man mark, that's the frustrating thing when, a lot of the commentators, I hear a lot of the commentators talk about Arsenal and their zonal defending and is that the way to go? And the statistics show this and this and this. But the problem is with zonal defending is that you don't have anybody to blame because you don't know whose man it was. With man marking, it's pretty simple. You watch the replay and you slow it down and you pause it right before it goes in and you see who's the man marker. And, so it was Jazz on the first one, Moose on the second one, and Tim Ream on the third one. And it's just, there's very little physical contact. I just don't see, when you see our players go in, they're getting mauled, they're getting grabbed and pulled and pushed and all this kind of stuff. And I just didn't see that. It was all very easy for them. And so that's pretty frustrating. And that's, going back to kind of what we said before, that's simply personal pride and personal responsibility is, do I want to get to the ball before this player does, or am I just going to let him do what he wants to do and hope the ball doesn't come to me? That's somebody trying to pass the buck and that's somebody trying to hide. And that's pretty frustrating from a professional footballer. And you just hope that they can kind of see the light and Kit can kind of train that out of them.
Well, it's funny because Kit did mention this, and it's a slogan here in New England, do your job. Just do your job. Do your job. That's your job. Do your job, basically. And that's what we're talking about in all three instances. You know what your responsibility is. Do your job. That's all. And I'm sure all three players will learn from that, and next time hopefully they will do their job. All right, Matt, let's now move to Spain. What's interesting about these questions, they're from everywhere. We had one from New Zealand, one from America. This one's coming from Spain, from Roger Lewis. Again, let me just pull this up real quick. Here's Roger's question. Is Ross McCormick turning into another Brian Ruiz? Kit does not seem to have a defined position for him. He seems to play in every position apart from the one he was purchased for. Very interesting question by Roger. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The simple answer to that question is, God, I hope not. I don't think that he, because I don't think he has definitely the skills on the ball that Ruiz has. The individual technical ability. I think he's a good technical player, but I think Ruiz is. I thought he was a very, very good just individual technical player, but. I think what we're seeing from Ross is maybe an inability to adapt to different defending tactics against him. There might be a little bit of confusion about, you know, where is he better underneath Dembele? Is he better square with Dembele? Is he better showing out wide? Things like that. And I think what we need from Ross is some consistency. And I think that's what the team needs is, because I think right now, I'm not sure they know where to look for Ross. I think they, because he tends to almost change position by, you know, half. You almost wonder if the team doesn't really know where he's going to be. I think I'd like to see a little bit more consistency just in how he in his individual tactics and where he the spaces that he puts himself, so that the team can know where he's going to be. It's something that I talk to. To my team about, my center forwards about is, you've got to be consistent on where you show for the ball and how you show for the ball, because at that point, if you're consistent with that, it's going to be a lot easier to find you, because it's a lot more predictable for our center midfielders, for outside backs to be able to find you, and so you've got to be predictable to your own teammates. You don't want to be predictable to the defenders, but you want to be consistent with how you show to the ball and so they can find you on a consistent basis and so you can, you know, be dangerous.
Listen, I think that you really nailed that, Matt. And what's interesting about McCormick, while you were talking about being in a consistent location and players knowing where he's going to be, I think it's important. And it's funny, I think it also goes back to our discussion about doing your job. I think, again, what's interesting about McCormick, I think McCormick really cares about what's happening with Fulham Football Club. You know, again, sometimes he does get isolated, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't care. I think what he tends to do, Matt, and tell me if I'm wrong here, I think he's trying to do too much. I think he's trying to do other people's jobs at times because he wants to help so much. You know, again, it might not come off that way sometimes when he does get isolated, but I think he might be, believe it or not, trying to do too much instead of just doing his role.
I completely agree. I think when he is the kind of player that you love because he cares, and he cares so much, and he wants so badly for the team to get a result and things like that. But you also get frustrated in how he chooses to go about it, which is putting it all on him and all on himself, and really trying to play three players' roles instead of just playing his role well.
Right.
We've talked about it before where, you know, the restaurant analogy where, you know, you'd rather a restaurant do one thing really, really well than three things average. That's what we really want to see from Ross is him, kind of relax and trust his teammates and trust that his role is an important one and that he needs to focus on that.
I totally agree. You know, again, he has something building with Moussa Dembele, that partnership. And for me, I just hope he concentrates on that and building his role, sticking with his role and trusting his teammates like you just mentioned, because then it could all work together. I do think that there's a tendency on what I've watched from McCormack is that he wants to influence the game so much that he could be, you know, hurting himself. You know, just concentrate on doing his job, and I think he will be more successful in doing what he does. Like you said, concentrate on the one thing you do best. And I think right now that's working with Moussa Dembele up front and working together as a partnership and being the striker that he can be. Because he can score goals for us. There's no question in my mind. I think he just needs to put all of his focus there. All right, Matt, let's move on. One last question. This comes from our friend in Bulgaria, Yavor Alexiev. Like I said, we are everywhere. In the last few games, Kidd has been reluctant to bring a third striker on or change formation despite being behind. He keeps subbing Woodrow for Dembele or the other way around. Can you provide any insight into why he keeps doing this?
I think it's a very good question. I think it's a very good question, and I think that you'd like to see, a change in formation at times, at least, possibly for the last 15 minutes or, something like that, to go three up front, I'm not sure I have the answer to that. I would like to see him go to three up front at times and really go for a game. I'm not sure that's in Kit's nature. I think that, at 3-2, I fear that maybe he's more worried about it being 4-2 as compared to it being 3-3. And that's a little bit worrying. I think that there is, I know goal difference may come into it, but very rarely does it at the end of the season. But, I don't really think there's a big difference between losing 3-2 and losing 4-2. There's just not. It's the same thing to me. And so I would rather see us, make an aggressive, again, just like, when we talk about players making aggressive mistakes, I'd rather see Kit make an aggressive mistake because I think that's more forgivable than staying with the same formation and expecting a different result. I mean, that's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, not changing, expecting a different result. And so, I don't think he's going insane, but I would like to see him, at least try to make an aggressive play. And if he makes a mistake, I think fans are going to be forgive him easier, or be quicker to forgive him because he is trying to make an aggressive move. And so I definitely would like to see him try that.
Okay, very good. Very, very interesting take. Again, I would like Kit to be able to change the formation, change the philosophy every once in a while, even during a match, if you need to. Again, make the adjustments. It's something I would like to see. So I'm glad that Yavor mentioned that on the College Talk Facebook page so we could discuss it. All right, Matt, listen, we have a few more minutes. I'm just curious, again, before we end the show, do you have any thoughts on this upcoming match against QPR?
I'm excited. I always love the local derbies and the rivalry games, and it's definitely one that I want to get over and see. I think it's going to be interesting. QPR have been on decent in decent form at the beginning of the year, but I do think that there's going to be some matchups, and you and I talked about it a little bit, some matchups that maybe could be advantageous to us, and so. Hopefully, the one thing that you're pretty certain is going to be there is the atmosphere, and I think that's something that maybe lacks from week to week, just because of the not being in the Premier League and the big boys not coming to town and the stadium not being sold out. But I think we're going to see that this week. I think we're going to see that tomorrow, and so it'll be interesting to see kind of how that helps the players and does it. Kind of energize their play and allow them to hopefully get a result.
Well, let's hope so, Matt. Again, we actually have two huge matches coming up, and next week we should be able to have the opportunity to maybe break down both of them. We're talking about the match against QPR, and then we have a match next week against Wolves, both at home. These two matches coming up, very, very big for Fulham because you have a chance to get some points here. That, again, I'm going to say this right now. I'll be disappointed if they don't get six out of these two. I'm not saying that it's a slam dunk because it's not. These are two hard matches, but they're both at home, and we should expect to win them both. So I'll be curious, Matt, when we come back next week, what happens as we break down those next two matches.
Yeah. It, like you said, it's two very important matches, and it could really turn our season.
Absolutely.
It could really give us a big upturn if we could get, 6 points or even 4 points or even just not lose the two matches. I think it really – but at home, obviously, you're looking for 3 points. But, I think it could be a big upswing and really give us a boost, going towards the Christmas period. So it's – because these matches are going to start coming pretty thick and fast. So yeah, it's two big matches that could really impact the season.
Absolutely, and you know, I'm thinking of both of these matches as what I would call crossroads. You know, crossroads matches, meaning we could really push on from here in these two matches, or it could really just keep us, you know, again, I guess you could say in neutral, which I don't want to see Fulham in neutral anymore. I want to see us pushing forward, and I think there's a major opportunity coming up against these two opponents, and I hope Forward take advantage of these two games because they could really push on from here. All right, Matt, it's time to wrap up the show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cars Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cars Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. It's a great way to listen back to the show. That's going to do it for the 7th edition of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cars Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.
Take care.
Boys and girls.